Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. It's another week, and I gotta warn you all up front, we could not find that many interesting news stories.
I feel like it was a light week on stories, or maybe we just didn't feel the inspiration we normally do. Are we losing the light in our eyes?
But that's all right, because we'll still find some things to yap about. I'm certain of it.
We always do.
But before we get into all of that, there are some important little housekeeping things that need to be done.
Put your ones up.
Yeah, ones in chat.
If you're Premier gang, rise up.
YouTube premiere, and if you're not, a thumbs up will do nicely. Actually, a thumbs up works either way. Do that either
That's
way.
That's true. That everyone should just do that, even if you're not in the premiere.
Yeah, and a comment.
Comment, you know, say what you like about the pod or what you think about Paul's hair, you know.
Yeah, nice thing. What do you think about Alex's hand?
What hand? What?
Yeah, what do you think about it?
It's still black.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Yu-Gi-Oh! Though. YCS Anaheim did happen this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And we should congratulate the winner of YCS Anaheim, Kamal Crooks. Kamal. Yeah, he won with a Crystron Canine deck against Cameron Neal's Yummy deck in the finals. It was Yummy Mitsurugi, which Mitsurugi has had a big pop-off again. It's already been pretty popular, but even more so.
Is it weird that I like it when I recognize the names of, like, YCS, like, finalists?
Yeah, I mean, you start to kind of realize these names pop up a lot.
Like, I know it's... Because it can kind of create the illusion that there's this, like, an elitist group of Yu-Gi-Oh! Players that win YCSs and no one else can. But I feel like it kind of creates this idea of, like, continuity and can start creating narratives when... You know, the best players win our biggest events.
Right. So the thing about this event, though, is people aren't so much talking about the winners and losers, but rather
what else is there to talk about?
The way in which it all played out. Because I watched a little bit of the finals, and they say this is kind of happening all throughout Top 8. It was a bit of a wash. It showed some of those ugly sides of Yu-Gi-Oh! That... For a while, it felt like we'd gotten away from.
The double match loss.
No, not that. But I'm sure those happened too. But yeah, people were talking about the way that, like, you know, this Crystron Canine deck can do that new artifact lock. And
oh, yeah. And just knock him out the game.
Yeah, the finals was pretty much just a couple of games of that. I mean, it went to game three, but yeah, like, they summon artifact Mjolnir, the opponent's out of the field. It force activates, even though you don't have a legal target. And then it locks your opponent out of special summoning to the end of the next turn. And so now they take their turn. They can't summon. And you've got your whole canine board of things. And they can't play.
My understanding was that during the final, both players just took one turn, locking the other one out. And that was that.
Yeah. Also, there was Automat Rizeal, which got in top four. And that was hand-looping people with Evil Swarm Ouroboros.
Oh, Ouroboros, how come you never played for a good reason?
Yeah, just another one of these old Xyz monsters kind of rearing its ugly head. It's funny because...
I remember when Evil Swarm came out.
Yeah, we're talking 2013 or something.
Ouroboros was strong, but it took like three materials, and we kind of just forgot it existed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's back, and it's ripping cards out of your hand. And also, Arch Nemesis Protos made a lot of premieres around here.
He's like, oh, you like playing a particular attribute of monster? Too bad.
So yeah, what a lot of people seem to be sort of lamenting is this loss of the perceived balance of the Justice Hunters format, where it was just Yummy and like Vanquisol Canine and a little Draco Tail here and there, and like people were doing their turn zero plays, but it all felt fair because, like...
We were all doing it.
Yeah, everybody was doing it, and you weren't locking your opponent out because the matches and the turns were so interactive. And so now it seems, after the last ban list, despite losing Paradise Smasher, which is cut from the same cloth as these other cards, you know, skip your opponent's turn, they can't do anything, new people have risen to take the mantle. New
strategies, cards. New decks, and seems many of them.
Yeah, a few different ones. So people don't like this. People are begging Konami already for an emergency ban list. I hate to break it to you. This is Konami. Don't get your hopes up.
It would be weird to make an emergency ban list for a situation that a ban list created. Because, like, you know, well, usually when we get emergency ban lists, a new card is being introduced into the game that warps the format in a real way. But in this case, we had a ban list that broke the format, and so what was left filled in, and we hate it.
Yeah, and you know, for what it's worth, YCS Lille was last weekend and did not seem to have this problem, so there's certainly an argument to be made that, well, maybe this was just the Anaheim meta.
Maybe, you know, American players hate playing Yu-Gi-Oh! More than European players.
Yeah, these very uninteractive games. I mean, the pendulum always swings. It's a real
us versus them thing.
Yeah. The pendulum swings. Like, you know, one weekend it might be like more hand traps. The next weekend people might be doing like more board breakers, or, you know, just the strategies are, they're in flux. So I don't think that this is enough cause to, like, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh's dead, this whole format's over and finished. Like, things can change. I think the next, you know, at the next YCS, whenever that is, in a couple weeks, people will have brought necessary preparations, and we'll see if these same strategies continue to prevail, or if it's just, like, a one-time
thing. It is a bit of a pain, because you know how that trickle down from YCS results. Like, all of a sudden, everyone at their locals are going to be playing these, like, lockout monsters, and games are going to get less interactive. But I guess that's also what spurs people to then start running what beats these strategies and beats these decks. So it's probably fine, right? Like,
yeah. I think it's just something where, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! At its core, and I was actually making a video about this just before we started recording. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a game of war crimes. Like, it's fun to sort of convince yourself that this game can be interactive, and for a while it was looking like it, you know?
We really got that wool pulled over our
eyes. We had a little respite, and then, you know, some people have kind of described Vanquished Soul as maybe being load-bearing, in the sense that, like, it was a strong but very interactive and fun deck to play against and play with, and because it could play during turn zero, it meant that if someone was going to try to do these locks against you, Vanquished Soul would not let you do that lock to them.
Right.
Because they would, like, interrupt it with, you know, removal or card stealing or whatever. And I think there is something to be said about that. With its absence, this stuff does feel like it's more prevalent. But at their core, I mean, I think, like, players are always... Yu-Gi-Oh! Is always going to be a game of, like, prevent the opponent from doing the thing. Because why would I want to, like, trade with your cards? Like, with these one-for-one trades where, like, we're kind of baiting things out and, like, interacting, when I can just say, no, Alec, you can't play anything on your next turn.
No, I mean, we basically wrote the book on what a floodgate is, and we've been using them aggressively and often. 4 years is not a new thing. We've always had them, and anytime you could use a floodgate to lock your opponent out of the game, you just did it. Why?
Because it's faster.
It guaranteed a win, and it was quick.
Yeah, it's quick and dirty, and, you know, I know that there's a sect of people who kind of are like, all these meta sheep players, they all play the same thing. But generally speaking, I don't really blame the players at this point. Like, I mean, you know, it's up to you decide what deck you play and what strategies you use. But ultimately, I think a lot more of this lies on Konami. They need to, A, you know, ban existing floodgates. I think that I feel like people have had enough with some of these cards now. Like, I don't know why Arch Nemesis Protoss came off the ban list. And
so, that's a funny thing. I don't know if people have had enough.
I know what you're, yeah, I know
because
what you mean.
Because from my analogy, I think of Konami as kind of an arms dealer. They deal us the weapons that we use to destroy each other in tournament. And then, you know, they give us all these weapons, and then we take them and then use them on each other pretty liberally and as fast as we possibly can.
I think that is true. It's like, it's, I guess what I should say is, like, I don't blame the players for doing what the company has put into the game. Like, if Konami is going to release these cards that are floodgates, and they're going to make archetypes that have, like, no restrictions on what you can summon, and, you know, and you can just bridge into Mitsurugi with your King of the Feral Limbs, or you can bridge into this with your, you know, Banshee or whatever, like, or Moon of the Closed Heaven. Yes, they eventually get around to banning some of the cards, but more come out of the woodwork, because this game has, like, 13,000 different cards or something. So it's like everyone kind of, I guess, shares the blame to some degree.
You know, I want to blame the players, and I thought about it. It's like, well, if the world just dropped like an AK-47 in my lap, right? Now I have no use for one, but I'm going to shoot it, right? Like, I'm going, because this high-powered thing landed in my hands. It's human nature to be like, well, I kind of just want to know what it's like. I kind of want to feel. I just want to know. And I think the same is true for, like, for floodgates and, like, walking floodgates and these war crime-like cards.
Yeah.
They put them in our hands, and it's like, even if you know this card is toxic, you know it's not good for the game, it's like,
but it will assure your victory.
It's like, I kind of want to know what it's like.
And I think to add on to that analogy, and maybe we should have picked a slightly tamer thing,
not to be political,
yeah, please keep our monetization YouTube, but you know, like, the problem that makes floodgates, I think, so tempting, and like these whole lockouts and hand loops, is because if left to their own devices, your opponent would A, do the same thing to you, and B, what you are floodgating yourself against is so overwhelmingly powerful otherwise. I described last week like my experience with the Duelist Cup and how like Malice was running wild. And Malice is truly a reprehensible deck. It is deplorably strong. And it can just continue to play and continue to play and continue to play. And what?
You anti-spell fragranced my Performa Pal deck once.
Yeah, I know.
My deck was not strong.
I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry, guys. I'm bringing up a whole mess.
For some reason, that just hit me in the soul.
Yeah, it might have been a tournament. Must have been a tournament. Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament to bring out the worst. But like, when you consider, you know, like what Malice will do, like, is they will play and play and play and play and play. And no amount of, like, your little basic imperms and ash blossoms is going to be enough to stop them.
They play through
they
all
the shrug
stuff.
Through any, like, one-for-one type trades. And their inboard will be Allied Code Talker and Opelousa and Cyber's Desave Worm and a bunch of other stuff. And, like, you will have no hope of playing. Opelousa's
banned.
I'm talking Master Duel.
Oh, okay.
But, like, the general principle applies kind of across. It's like, these decks will do the unthinkable to you. And so you have kind of two choices. You can try to maybe like hope to have the right singular hand traps, or maybe you can play through this board with like just the right set of board breakers, or you can prevent your opponent from doing anything. And that's kind of where that appeal of like the artifact Lancia. Why bother with the hand traps when I can use Lancia against the Malice deck and freeze it in place and it just can't do the thing? Or why deal with all this stuff when I can just droll you? Or shifter you.
Oh, my deck can search Pachycephalo.
That's another one new. Yeah, Gallant Granite will just search Pachycephalo, and so I'll make my board and I'll summon that. And like, it's annoying because I can't fully blame players when the cards are legal and the opposition is so strong. Why wouldn't you just say, okay, well, I'm just going to prevent my opponent from playing? And I hate that. And so I think that ultimately it's going to kind of come down to Konami to do not just one, but two things. The first is, yes, please get rid of, like, the floodgates. I've said for a while, I don't think anti-spell fragrance should be legal.
Horrible card.
Why? I don't know why they even made it, like, interact with pendulums the way that it does and all that. But, like, all those floodgates really should probably go. But also, it's not just getting rid of those is only half the battle.
You gotta stop making new ones.
You gotta stop making, like, obscenely strong archetypes that just have zero lock-in, right? Like, a lot of these cards, like, they just canines. But even, like, Tier Laments and Kashtira and like Snake Eye and all that stuff from last year that never locked you into anything.
Decks are just like shell, just all gas.
Yeah, they spam links, they spam synchros, they spam Xyz, they spam more links, they spam fusions. Jesus. And like
Snake Eye really didn't have a break on it. It was just go, go, go.
And also like it got to the point where you kind of started to realize Snake Eye didn't even have an identity. It's just a deck that gives you monster bodies
into virtually anything. We were going into what was it? Barone, Opelousa. We were having struggles deciding like, oh, this 15 extra deck is too small. I can't fit all the different weapons I can make.
And I mean, I know like it's kind of moving out of vogue now, but like Fiendsmith, sort of same deal. Like, it's just, it's an engine. Like, if your deck kind of ended on a couple things, you turn them into Moon of a Closed Heaven, and now you go into Fiendsmith because whatever, and, like, it doesn't have any locks. I think that's what Konami, that's, like, the second part, is you can't, because when you're just banning these little floodgates, we're just chasing our tails, right? Artifact Dagda summoning Mjolnir feels awfully familiar because just a couple years ago, it was scythe locking people.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, having somebody summon Mjolnir to your field feels a lot like...
the gimmick puppet.
Yeah, the gimmick puppet lock with, like, Albion the Sanctifier Dragon and Brandon Expulsion, because it's really the same thing, just clothed a little differently. Same with, like, Evil same Swarm criminals, Ouroboros.
Different masks.
Evil Swarm Ouroboros. It's just Mulan Glacia. It's just a Trish hand loop or an Omega hand loop or a Dark World Silva. Because, like, these things exist, and so you have to, like, be very diligent about hitting them and then not making new cards that just re-enable something.
In a weird way, we have this cyclical nature with Yu-Gi-Oh! Where we but also Konami, keep creating the same, like, toxic strategies over and over again. Well, it'll be under a new, like, archetype, but we're doing the same things. Like, oh, everything you send in the graveyard gets banished. You can't search. You can't special summon. You can't.
Can't.
God forbid we actually sit down and play this game. And for 1 month, we were actually having to do that.
Yeah.
Short month, though.
So that's kind of what happened. I know that sort of turned into one of my little modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Rants or whatever.
Hey, you didn't say...
Yeah, I didn't say midcore.
You did. Oh, okay, I guess we did say it.
Although I do think that's an interesting segue into Genesis, which also was at YCS Anaheim.
Yep.
And was won by a Vanquisol deck. So
that's impressive given the point costs on those cards.
Well, actually, I guess it's not really, because they didn't really give them any point costs until they eventually added 10 to Holly Sue.
Wait, is that the only one that caught one?
Yeah. At first, when they first made Genesis, Vanquisol was unhit. And then eventually they went in and added like a 10-point cost to Vanquisol Holly Sue, which kind of like slightly nerfed it. But yeah, Vanquisol won the event. I think it actually got like 3 of the top 16 slots or something like that. So
I guess, yeah, I mean, it's a strong... I feel like Genesis is going to be ruled by decks that have strong like main deck engines.
Yes. The other decks actually were Radiant Typhoon, Generator, Odeon, Exosister, yep,
okay,
Artmage, and then a Memento deck, which that's a little bit more extra deck reliant. But
Artmage caught me off guard. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that. I'll have to check out the deck list itself.
A White Forest list too. Resonator. What an interesting format.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking like Genesis is kind of going to be that thing. Now, I don't want people to get too fooled, right? At the end of the day, that we are still like playing modern Yu-Gi-Oh!, so there will always be a degree of like people are going to try to combo as hard as they can within the restraints of what Genesis places on you. So that's going to come back to like, will you know, how diligent will Konami be with adjusting point costs to maybe cut out little issues as they crop up?
I wonder if anyone has like used Max C.
It doesn't seem like it. As I'm like kind of just sifting through these lists, they did a good job. They made Max C like 50 points, and I just don't think it's worth playing two copies of it in exchange for all of the other potentially good hand
That's
drafts.
True, because you do that, now your deck has to be a 0 point cost deck, which they do exist. It's just, well, is that worth it?
I mean, part of the fear of... or part of the reason why you run Maxi is to like draw into Ash Blossoms, draw into Effect Veilers, or draw into Imperms, Nibiru. And so when you're using Maxi in this format, you won't ever be able to do that because that's your full point cost and all those other cards have some other point cost attached.
True.
I was really excited to see that like Generator got like third place. That was pretty cool. And like it's actually like a Generator
deck. I mean, as many times I've played against your Generator deck, I know the Generator like... you know, 40-card main deck engine, you know, it's a bit tougher than it seems. Like, it does what it does, and it's efficient about it. I think that's what's going to be key in these early Genesis tournaments, is just your deck being able to do what it does without the need of a lot of extra parts.
Yeah, so very cool to see that Genesis is at least popping off. People seem to be enjoying that. I think that it's a shame that we can't really have a time when both formats are looking fun. Like, well, we were so close.
We don't know if we can get that, right? Like, we might. Genesis is so young. The TCG, while loves being toxic, if, like, who knows what's in store next with the TCG? Maybe we end up in another, like, interactive format. And then Genesis is also fun. And then we're just all having a good time. But with our luck, you know, the next set will come out. And then a card will hit Genesis that breaks the format. But we're like, okay, we'll just go back to playing the advanced format again, so it's fine. So we'll just forever be flip-flopping between formats. But I won't, because I only have one advanced format deck, and that's just going to have to be how that goes.
Yeah, so there've been a few other, like, very small tidbits of Yu-Gi-Oh! News. I know last week we talked about the Neymar collab, so we've already seen that. But here's something else. They've revealed the Chronicles deck, The Fallen and the Virtuous, is going to be having like TCG celebration events from October 22nd, which is when it releases, through November 23rd. So basically for a month, your OTS store might choose to have a celebration event and you can win this cool mat that I was about to look at, but then
I tried to open the mat earlier and then my page didn't load because I wasn't on the Wi-Fi. So I actually have not seen it, so I'm excited.
Yeah, it's this mat.
Oh yeah, I need that.
So
I need that.
If I remember, I'll put it on screen.
I don't even play branded.
Yeah, he's got like Albas covering his eye and Ecclesia, who's like worried about him. And then he transforms. Very cool. And it's going to basically be coinciding with the final episode.
So. I am going to turn my Spriggans deck into a Genesis deck, though. I don't know how many branded cards I'll be able to fit in there.
I guess you'll get to see the Spriggans in the next episode.
I'm so excited.
Kit. And that's going to be over.
Spriggans Rocky.
And there have been a few new cards shown for, like, Burst Protocol. Not really going to get into them because, like, they're just archetypal things. A DDD, some new Radiant Typhoons, K9 Draco Tail and Yummy get a new card. So
we finally get the last Draco Tail fusion. I say finally. I feel like they wasted absolutely no time getting the Justice Hunter support out.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes they wait a little while with these, like, little crossover or the deck builder packs, like getting them their support, like Vanquish Soul. But this time they are.
They say the very next three products.
Yeah, like here, get it done. Support. So very cool. There is one card, Forbidden Crown, which is the new Forbidden Quick Play spell.
Oh, yeah.
This is one that a lot of people have been saying kind of feels like it's going to be the next big staple spell. It's a quick play spell that neither player can activate monster effects in response to it. So that's already good. You target a face-up monster. Actually, you don't even target. It doesn't target, so even better.
Wonderful.
The monster's effects are negated. It can't attack. It can't be destroyed by battle or card effects. It's unaffected by other cards' activated effects, except its own. It can't be tributed, and it can't be used as fusion, synchro, exes, or link material.
Stupidly flexible.
Yeah, this can be useful for protecting your own monsters. It can be useful for disabling your opponent's monsters. And it's a quick play spell, so you get all the flexibility in the world of the timing with which you want to activate it. So that's kind of cool.
I feel like that's going to be a 50 plus point card in Genesis format. That card's incredibly flexible. Might be.
Well, I guess when it releases, it won't even have a Genesis cost because that's their new. That's what they said is like when a card comes out, it's not going to have a cost yet. Yeah, they said in one of those Genesis blog posts that if it's not a card that is part of an existing, like, strong archetype, which I guess maybe that Forbidden counts as that, they're not going. That's why, like, Radiant Typhoon has no point costs.
Interesting.
But might feasibly have them in the future. But yeah, they said that when the new set comes out, they want to allow those cards to kind of breathe in the Genesis format at first.
Interesting.
But, like, the new K9 card launched, like, from Duo Dimensions, like, just launched with a points cost.
Okay, I guess that makes some sense.
Because it's already known that K9 is
known quantity. They know that the archetype can get broken at any point, so.
I think one last thing I'm going to just say on this, kind of to bring it a little bit back to the YCS topic, and people have pointed this out, and I think it's a valid thing that needs to be said. It's a little almost irritating that Konami is so attentive to Genesis format. Because it shows that they know what cards are troubling and like problematic and are overtuned even before they come out. Like, I mean, if you're gonna be like, okay, Draco Tail Fraxel or whatever launches at a 10 point cost, or you know, K9 Neroi does, it's like, so you guys know like what the strong stuff is, and you have all these point costs and stuff. So, like, fix it. You know what I mean? Like, don't design more broken floodgates. Don't design cards without lock-ins. Like, you know, I just feel like we should know better by now, I guess.
You know what that tells me?
Hmm.
It tells me that the folks from the TCG who make our Genesis format may not have as much say in the ban list as we think they do.
Yeah, you figure it's like Japan.
I wasn't going to say it.
I'll say it. I think that it's pretty much that.
Because like
there must be something. I can't
possibly believe that the makers of Genesis format would allow us to be summoning Protos today. That doesn't even, like, that, like, it feels like two very different people have to be making these decisions, but we know the TCG staff isn't, like, huge.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's very troubling.
Conspiracy theory.
It's very troubling when you see, like, they know what good Yu-Gi-Oh! Can look like, and then they just kind of let bad Yu-Gi-Oh! Persist.
Paul, we need a tinfoil Yugi hat.
Yeah, we can just pass it back and forth in this podcast.
Whenever you make a conspiracy theory, just get your tinfoil Yugi hat, put it on.
Well, anyway, that's the Yu-Gi-Oh! For this week. There's not really any, like, major news as far as I can tell. So, it's just kind of fallout of another YCS.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Players are Yu-Gi-Oh!ing. What else can you ask for?
So, I haven't seen too much other card game stuff, but one neat thing I saw, is in a little bit of brief Magic the Gathering news, is that a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Magic the Gathering bus was spotted in New York City, and
but was that where's that coming from? They didn't.
This announce. Is something that I guess, like, New York Comic Con. Just for some background for those who might not know, typically at New York Comic Con or things like Anime Expo, you will see around the actual host city buses and, like, window installations just advertising, you know, anime and games and stuff. So this is a Magic the Gathering Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles bus, which suggests that
this is the unannounced Universes Beyond product.
Yeah, the next Universes Beyond will be, as it was apparently rumored, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's weird that it would be announced this. I feel like they didn't plan for the bus to be seen this soon.
Yeah, but I guess they had to make the bus ahead of time.
Yeah, someone had to see it, so I guess that's fair. That's fair.
So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you buying your Universes Beyond TMNT?
Guys,
how do you feel?
If you remember last week, I already gave you my game plan for Universes Beyond for the next year. And I can honestly say I'm keeping to my plan. This will not move me. And that's not to say I dislike, you know, TMNT. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are a foundational part of my childhood, just like many other people. It's just, I ain't built like that, like, money-wise. And I kind of question, how do you make an entire Universes Beyond?
That's actually where my head franchise went. Because I remember I watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one of the renditions of it. I know there's been several.
There have been a few.
And are there enough characters, like, and just things in that universe? Because I don't know how large a Magic the Gathering set is, but my understanding is, like, if it's anywhere close to what a Yu-Gi-Oh! Size set is, like, let's say 100 cards, are there 100 different things in Teenage Mutant, like, Ninja Turtles?
I do feel like in the creature archetype department, you might struggle a little bit. I mean, there's four primary turtles. Depending on the iteration of the show, there's, like, an extra turtle here or there. I mean, there's Master Splinter. And you have their kind of rogues gallery. Shredder, the Krang, Bebop, Rocksteady. And I know I'm missing others, but, you know, people can fill in there. I know it feels more limited than, like, the idea of using the entirety of, like, the Spider-Verse for a product. Because, like, well, there's not really a TMNT verse. I mean, I guess there kind of is, and there kind of is.
I mean, I remember even with the Spider-Man set, people were, like, kind of, like, they felt that maybe it was scraping the bottom of the barrel with, like, the bagel is, like, a card. And
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles going to have, like, a slice of pizza?
I mean, it feels like a guarantee, because there has to be, like, a food token generating card, pizza. And there's no food more prominent in that franchise than pizza, so that you kind of just guessed
it. Yeah, like, I just don't think that there's enough
TMNT stuff. There's also Casey Jones and April O'Neil.
I mean, I guess there's going to be somebody who's like listening to this who's like, no, I could name 100 TMNT characters easy. So like,
do it. Do it in the comments right now.
Do it in chat. Go.
I'm sorry. I don't think.
And each character needs to be a separate comment so we get more engagement.
So I'm not going to lie. I feel like I'd struggle to get to 20. And I've watched a lot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I didn't get crazy into it. So I'm probably just not thinking of some.
Well, speaking of New York Comic Con, just a reminder, we'll be there.
We're going to be in Newark.
We're actually flying out the day after we record this. So if you are at New York Comic Con and you spot us, feel free to come up, say hello.
I'm finna get a bacon, egg, and cheese.
If there is a card game free play area, I will happily duel. I'm planning on bringing some decks, although...
Where can I get the best chopped cheese?
I have been told that I don't think Konami is actually doing official sanctioned play this year, for some reason or another.
Wait, they were there last year.
Yeah, they're going to be there. They're going to have their booth. They're going to have the Duel the Master.
So they're there.
But they're not going to have like that... Do you remember how like last year you could go to like sort of basement area or whatever, and like they were hosting.
Because we did the rivalry tournament there.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, like Rivalry of Warlords, like one other thing. And so, yeah, I don't think they're going to be doing that. I don't know exactly why, but.
It might be a space constraint thing.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, so we'll be there and it'll be pretty cool. Any other card game stuff? I feel like I didn't really see much. So. If there is other card game. What's been going on in like Gundam and stuff? I know you play Gundam and Digimon.
For me in the card game space right now, I'm reeling because we're going into the release of the next Digimon set, BT23. The pre-release events are this weekend. In fact, if you're going to be at New York Comic Con, they are actually selling the next Digimon set a week early at the event. So you don't actually have to sacrifice your pre-release. You can still get product early at the convention. So that's pretty cool. So that's happening right now. I'm really excited. Mastamon, my favorite Digimon and favorite deck strategy, is getting new support there, and I will be breaking the bank or whatever's left of my bank to get it. Gundam has a new set release later this month. I think it's in 2 weeks after this set for Digimon. But it's the second Gundam set. It's introducing the purple color. I mean, you know, other than the starter deck, but it has new purple cards in it, and it's really exciting because, right, you know, set one cards in any card game are very, you know, rudimentary, and technically the set two cards will be fairly simple too. But we're finally getting something to build off for the first time, kind of ever. So, I mean, it's going to be a very exciting time to play Gundam.
Okay.
What else is going on? I did end up building a Spider-Man deck, but in Magic the Gathering, but it's not. I did not buy anything, and I pretty much just chose to get a bunch of like cheap cards that no one wanted.
Oh, like just because you traded or were maybe given some.
I was just kind of given commons. I built a deck of villains. Nope, no one wanted them, so I did it.
Okay, no, that's fair. I in my card gaming. I'm trying to think of like what's been going on in my card gaming life. I played at locals this past weekend just in Yu-Gi-Oh! We had a little small tournament on Friday and another small tournament on Saturday. We haven't done any Genesis yet, surprisingly. I think that they're just still like working on how they want to do it. But like for what it was worth, we might as well have been playing Genesis. Everybody was kind of just playing.
Just on whatever.
Kind of whatever decks. It's actually it's a brand of locals I kind of enjoy though, of like, you know, we're not Evil Swarm Ouroboros hand loping people or like summoning, you know, whatever artifact Mjolnir to people's fields. So as far as I was concerned, I mean, I had fun. I was actually trying out my Dogmatica deck with the new Flirtily, the Thunderbolt, and Quadogmatica Beast is the new trap. And like, it's actually pretty reasonably fun. I was able to beat a Yummy deck, so I was pleased. I snatched all their synchros out of their extra deck. They weren't really. They're
kind of powerless. Oh, that is how Dogmatica play. Ew.
Yeah, Dogmatica's. It can be a little rude. Although I will say it's quite overly balanced. I mean, the loss of that Herald of the Arclight to one hurt this deck a lot. So you know, sort of collateral damage. Oh, get your
floodgate.
But floodgate in this deck? What floodgate? We don't. There's no such thing. Oh, so you're thinking of like Arclight isn't being summoned. We don't even summon it. We just send it to search. But that's the thing is like fair, honest, hardworking decks lose their benefits whenever you lose.
Darn,
you
know, meta game. But yeah, hey, meta in Genesis format, you can play it.
Actually, it's probably worse in Genesis because they hit like Nadir Servant and Ecclesia with some pretty hefty costs and like pre-prep and all that stuff. So,
but
there's not really
all a great the cards format for are it. Legal.
So I don't know. That was okay. It was kind of fun. I had a decent time. Anyways, in gaming news, I've seen a little smidgen of information, not really all too much. I know like Xbox has been in the news a whole bunch this past week, just from the whole Game Pass thing and people thinking like Xbox is done, it's out of the Xbox console race. Xbox
is over.
But one small bit of, I'm actually going to add this to our rain drop because I only just recently saw it, so you can maybe pull it up on your phone. But the reason why Alec isn't using a tablet today, you can probably guess.
I just like my phone. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Sure. The Xbox Ally X has been shipped out to some reviewers already. The ROG, like Ally Xbox thing that they're doing, you know?
Yep, it's in, they got it 2 weeks early. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and so somebody revealed or released a little quick review on it, although I guess the Reddit post has been since deleted. But we can kind of just go through the high points of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for reference, there's two different versions of this. There's like sort of a baseline version that's $600.
Right.
And then expensive. There's the, yeah, I know. And then there's the like premium proper version that's $1,000.
Very expensive.
So out the gate, I got to say, I think it's just before we even get into this little quick review, I have to say, I think that it is, it's a steep buy, and it's probably going to have a lot of competition on its hands because currently the Steam Deck is on sale. Like, LCD Steam Decks are, like, on sale right now for, like, $350 or now something. Now,
that's a price point.
So, you know, it's going to be a tough sell, but they say that ergonomically, the form factor is really good. This person described it as, you know, it feels less like a handheld and more like an actual Xbox controller with a screen attached. The grip felt natural. The buttons are exactly where they should be. The weight disappears after a few minutes of play. You know, it's one of those devices where you don't think about the hardware. You just play. That's good.
That's a good review. That's a very positive review.
Yeah. I feel that way about my Steam Deck as well. I remember when I first, like, got it, I was like, God, this thing is huge. But you play it for a while and it kind of...
Have you dropped it on your face?
No, thank goodness. I actually don't usually... Like, I do play the Steam Deck in bed, but I do not play it, like, above my head. Like, I still kind of, like, turn or, like, I do would. Something. Because if that thing falls on my face, oh, my God. I don't
you have a black eye. It. You're being abused by your Steam Deck.
They said that the interface and experience was maybe a little bit more lacking. Like, there's a new full-screen mode that's inspired by the Xbox UI. But it's a bit rough around the edges compared to the elegance of SteamOS. Navigation is fast. Armory crate responds instantly. I don't know what that is.
What is an armory crate?
I think that's maybe, like, the thing they use to like show all the different games that you have, and the menus don't stutter, but they say it still feels more functional than polished. Coming from a Steam Deck OLED, I miss the deep contrast and richer colors. This screen does the job, but once you've tasted OLED, it's hard to go back.
See, that's kind of a damning like part, since this product is like three times the cost.
Well, three times the cost of, I guess, an LCD Steam Deck. Because the Steam Deck OLED's still about like $600. Okay. But still, a product that's more expensive, having not as good screen technology.
Yeah, you never want someone to have to say that.
Someone says that the battery life and noise was really good. So running it, I guess you get to pick if you run at 17 watts or increase the TDP higher to like 25 or 35 watts. But if you're running at 17 watts, you can comfortably push past 3 hours in heavy titles, which is a huge leap compared to earlier handhelds. Cooling is excellent. The fans stay almost silent. The chassis never gets uncomfortably hot. So that's cool.
That's actually impressive.
You sold on this thing yet? You buying your ROG Ally?
I can't afford that. Absolutely not. I play gacha games.
They say that performance is pretty good. You can expect to play games at 900p or even 1080p in medium to high settings at a baseline of about 35 to 40 FPS if you're playing at 25 watts. So, yeah, they say that overall the experience feels pretty consistent as far as performance goes. And the main limitations they had was that the full screen environment locks you into games from official platforms. So there's no easy way to add emulators or custom installs yet, which limits the flexibility. They lament the smaller LCD panel, which feels like a step down once you use an OLED panel. And they say that overall, while the Xbox-style interface is promising, it needs another round of refinement before it matches the slickness of SteamOS.
Dang.
So their verdict is that it feels like the finished version of the Ally X, that was the previous generation of this product, right, a handheld that gets the fundamentals right, ergonomics, acoustics, cooling, and battery. If Asus can pair this hardware maturity with a stronger chip, open up the full screen experience, and deliver a bigger OLED display in future iterations, they'll have something truly dominant in this space.
So it still feels like an upgrade of the previous generation.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's good. That's, I think that's like the bare minimum. If you're going to launch this product, it needs to at least feel better than the last one. It's not great that it competed so heavily with the Steam OLED since it's been around for a while, and that's the product everybody knows. Like,
I will say, at $1,000, not getting an OLED screen feels very bizarre.
At $1,000, it should have blown the OLED out of the water.
That's true.
I mean, it could be that we're being priced at the point that the economy demands.
But, like, even let's say if this was, like, $800, like, 20% off. $800 is still high to not have an OLED screen. The Steam Deck OLED is $650 or whatever, like...
Yeah, it feels like a tough sell. But, I mean, now, at this point, the Steam Deck does have better economies of scale than the ROG does. So, to some degree, Steam can be more competitive price-wise.
I know its general specs are also lower, like performance and like settings that you'll run games at. Like, I think it's like only 720p or like 800p.
So, yeah, there will be certain trade-offs. I guess my thing is, when we're playing like handheld games, how important are specs really? Because
you could be
playing on a console on your PC if specs are that important. I think the most important thing is the portability of it, the comfort, which sounds immaculate. Fine,
yeah. Sounds like they really handled that.
The fans being quiet, A1.
Like, you're right. I think when it comes to, however, become like this like gaming podcast, we're talking about these like this device that literally neither of us will ever own. But
I would not mind owning one. I just can't hold it.
You hear that, ROG? Just send us one for review. We'll give you all the positive press you need. But no, I do think that you're right. Like, the priorities change somewhat when you're designing for like a handheld, kind of these like handheld PC gaming experiences. Is like, I'm not as concerned about the resolution that my little freaking 7-inch screen is running at. Mm-hmm. I'm more so concerned about like, is this thing hot in my hands? Is it comfortable to hold for longer than like 30 minutes? Is the battery life, which, you know, it's supposed to be like a kind of mobile handheld thing, like, how long can I go without plugging it in? Will it survive my entire plane trip, right?
Yeah, I do worry about the fact that it has limited ability to, like, sideload different games and apps on it.
Yeah, because the Steam Deck, it's a little bit easier to do that.
Because, I mean, I feel like when you buy one of these, you really don't want to have to buy multiple of them, and you kind of want to make it your every game handheld. You want to be able to play everything you possibly can on it. So there being a limitation right there is a little, that kind of irks me. Like, if I were choosing between these, let's say I have unlimited money, right? And I was just choosing between this and the Steam OLED, I'd likely just pick the Steam OLED purely based on the fact that I can play more on it.
Yeah, and I also think, like, as far as specs go, like, game performance, I think the only game performance thing that's really important with a handle, like, resolution, like I said, I don't really care. And this screen, if it runs at 720p, that doesn't really matter. I will say, I think, like, frame rate is still fairly important.
Agreed.
You know, you don't want your game running...
stuttery.
Yeah, because, like, I don't need 60 FPS on my handheld, but I don't need anything that's, like, less than 30, because then that gets, it's choppy. And
nice 16 FPS.
Yeah, so overall, my main thing with this is I think it kind of showcases maybe this is like what Xbox wants to be in the future, which is more of a like they put the Xbox label onto different products, like this ROG Ally, like, you know, the Meta Quest that they did, like the little Xbox Meta Quest.
They did do that, didn't they? Mm-hmm. I forgot.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of maybe what like Microsoft is trying to do, where like they might not want to really be as formally in the console business and more so be like Xbox branded thing, and you get your Game Pass, and like that's kind of how you game.
They want to be a brand and software.
And that's not bad, you know, just being like a third-party publisher. Like, because they own Activision Blizzard, they bought Bethesda. So maybe they're just going to like publish the games and have a platform that you play them on. It's like the Epic Game Store or whatever.
I mean, it's difficult to move consoles in this day and age, though I do think it's then strange to go and pump out a handheld that's more expensive than a console.
But then that's not even like their handheld. It's like ROG.
True. They're just branding a handheld.
It's a collab, so I don't know. I think it's cool. Is anybody listening interested in buying an Xbox Ally X?
And if you are interested in buying one, why not go ahead and buy one and send it to the pod?
Send it to the pod.
So we can review it, you know?
Yeah, we'll review it. We'll keep it if you don't mind.
Well, you know, you didn't give us a return like label, so we're going to hold on to it.
Yeah, we'll hold on until you get us that. No, then we move. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I have found myself more intrigued with these like handheld PC things now that I have a Steam Deck. So it's like the Steam Deck feels like it's something like the gold standard of these. Like, I guess if you don't count the Switch, like Switch is the obvious gold standard.
It's the
true
standard of everything.
But some would argue they're not even really competing with the Switch because like it's Nintendo.
The Switch has its own lane. It's competing against itself.
All right, well, now it's time to talk about an interesting question. We're not quite to the AI segment just yet. God. Don't worry. Hold your horses. It's coming. Alec, I have a question.
What's up?
Who gets a ticket when a Waymo does wrong and nobody's in the robotaxi? Who do you think?
What?
Yeah. So, do you know about Waymo, like what that is?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Waymo.
The self-driving, like kind of robo-taxi car thing where it's basically, it's your Uber. You can order a Waymo in certain areas, like, you know, California or whatever, maybe New York. You can order a Waymo. Well, what happened recently was a Waymo robo-taxi pulled an illegal maneuver in front of the police, but with no one behind the wheel, there's nobody to take the blame, at least for now. So my question for you is...
What do you mean, at least for now? They're going to make somebody up to take the blame?
Well, I think that they're implying that like the law has not caught up with this technology yet. So here's the thing. This Waymo robo-taxi pulled a U-turn.
Right, an illegal U-turn.
And the question is, like, so who gets the ticket? The police see it and they pull this car over. Actually, we'll get into whether or not how exactly it got pulled over. Yeah,
how do you pull over an autonomous vehicle?
But who do you think, like, in that situation, who should get the ticket, if anyone at all?
I think the cops should get the ticket for wasting their time.
Okay. I mean, like, because I think most people would say, well, whoever's in the, like, driving the car gets the ticket. If no one's driving the car, I would say, I guess, like, Waymo the company. I mean, they designed the software.
I mean, that does make sense. I see no reason why Waymo shouldn't take the citation. I know the way that like traffic infraction laws are written, there's no precedent for that, and it would probably take a judge to rule on such a thing.
Well, here's what they say. The illegal U-turn occurred in the last few days of September, according to the Associated Press, and when the San Bruno officers working a DUI enforcement operation saw it happen, they did their duty to pull over the car. Of course, being a robo-taxi, there wasn't anyone behind the wheel, and the Waymo Jaguar had no occupants inside to even speak to.
Huh?
So, yeah, these things...
It was completely empty?
Well, remember, though, after it drops you off, your Waymo dropped you off at
your
hotel...
Oh, yeah, it has to drive itself.
It has to kind of drive itself to the next job or destination, so there will be times when quite literally no one's in there. Mm. Although, even if someone was in there... If you're a passenger, how can you be at blame? You don't even sit behind the wheel in those.
That's so crazy.
No, I mean, I'm serious. Like, you know, because this article almost makes it seem as though like, maybe the police were hoping that like some passenger would be in the back seat and they could blame them. Like, it's your fault that this thing pulled an illegal U-turn. But like, to my understanding, you, the passenger, you don't get to like control the route it takes. You just put your destination in.
I do. it's very confusing, and I do understand like the police's frustration, because if they keep pulling over these autonomous vehicles with no one inside them, they have no one to hit. So I do see that they'll struggle to blow off steam during the day that way.
The department also knows that there is legislation coming to California that aims to mostly correct the situation by reporting the operating company, be it Waymo, Tesla, or any other autonomous taxi service, to the California DMV. So there's supposed to be a new law in effect on July 1st, 2026 that will allow officers to report these traffic violations.
It's going to be crazy when when Waymo, the company, goes to court behind these tickets.
I guess I still wonder, like, so I guess is the company just fined, I'm assuming? I guess they'll just pay a little fine?
I mean, it's likely these are still, like, traffic infractions, and so you can levy a fine on them, but only if, like, it holds up. Waymo should be able to fight every single ticket they're given.
Like, how do you mean? Like, just
cause? Well, because, like, for instance, like, if you get a speeding ticket, you don't just have to pay the fine. You can go to court and fight it.
Oh, like, I get what you're saying.
So, like, Waymo can just always fight the ticket. And being a large company, I'm sure they can probably fight their way out of anybody's, like, local municipal, like, court.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which also, I think, would just be a waste of people's time. But they do have to prove that the Waymo is committing these traffic infractions.
Oh, well, that would be pretty easy, though, because, like, there's dash cam footage.
There's dash cam footage, but that's never stopped somebody from beating a ticket before.
That's true. Let's escalate this a little bit further for fun. A Waymo... Well, no, listen to this. A Waymo T-bones you, Alec.
Okay.
You... So what do you do next? Like, literally, what are the next steps in that moment? You got T-boned by a Waymo.
Yep.
What's next?
Because normally, call a lawyer.
Okay.
Because it's, I think in that situation, it's similar to when you get into a wreck with like a company truck or like an 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
At that point, now it's a matter of suing the company responsible. But it's a personal thing. So that's actually not too different than what we have right now.
Yeah. Like, because what I wonder, I guess, is like this driverless Waymo bumped into you in some way, and like it hit you. What if it like just pulls away and just drives off?
Well, one, I really hope that I was able to like catch the license plate on that thing.
Yeah, because like I think most people nowadays have like dash cams and like rear all that stuff.
I don't.
But like, yeah, not everybody does. And typical Alex. So go T-bone him. No. But like some people don't. And so like the car drove off and you're in shock, or maybe you're even injured. And so you couldn't get a picture of the license plate.
I mean, hit and runs happen all the time. I'm from New Orleans. That's commonplace. Like, if you don't want them to, like, speed off on you, you got to cut them off, like, physically.
Yeah, it runs over you next.
Like, it can happen.
So, yeah, I mean, I just do wonder, like, what happens when, like, accidents get... Because just doing the illegal U-turn, you could fight it in court. Like, whatever. And Waymo probably will, or Tesla probably will. But, like, I guess if someone gets...
crazy fight.
Because if someone gets hurt, like... And there's also, like, that situation of, like, if you are in the Waymo, you're just using it as, like, for its Uber capabilities, and it, like, injures you, I would assume Waymo's got to be responsible for that.
I'm sure, as far as, like, liability goes, a lot of that's already baked into contracts and whatnot. But those, like, speeding tickets, I doubt that's actually... Like I doubt they actually have agreements. You don't think
it's going to be enforceable? Yeah,
it's going to be a few fights in court, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Like, it just makes you wonder. Like,
ooh, that judge going to be annoyed?
You know what? It also makes me think about. I know I'm like on this forever, but like, I guess like when you're inside of these self-driving cars, like you truly are kind of a prisoner.
It's a moving coffin.
Yeah, like I mean, and. I know, like, technically cars are fundamentally that. Like, there's this 2-ton hunk of metal where, like, in theory, you're not actually really in much control at some point. But, like, if we're talking, like, literally the car is self-driving and you're in the back seat taking this ride, like, just whatever dangerous thing it decides to do, it takes this illegal U-turn, you're just sort of a prisoner. Like, you're kind of just a
So, my thing is, I still would just prefer a human-driven taxi than these, like, autonomous vehicles, purely because of, like, one thing. Humans, at some point, stop. Like, if the Waymo thinks driving through this brick wall is supposed to get it to its destination, it's not just going to hit the wall. It's going to keep trying to go.
Yeah, until the computer's actually smashed, it might just keep going.
If something goes wrong with an autonomous vehicle, it likely doesn't actually realize something's wrong until it's been wrong for like the last 30 minutes. With like, even if your like human taxi cab driver had a bout of insanity, like once they hit something, it's kind of over now.
Yeah. So next time we visit like Los Angeles, you taking a Waymo?
Absolutely not.
Okay. What if it's half the price of an Uber?
Half the price? Nah, I can't do it, Chief. I know. Look, LA is extremely expensive, so I get it for most
people. I mean, literally, like an Uber, like 1 mile in LA is like $30. Like,
I'm from the South. You got people that are afraid to fly. How you get somebody in?
But you're not afraid to fly.
True, but would I fly in a self-driving plane?
Some say the planes basically do drive themselves.
Now I need to see a pilot. I need to see cheeks in seats.
All right, well, here's another little creepy thing of like autonomous technology. Ugh. As we approach the AI, Amazon's Ring, you know about the Amazon Ring services.
Yeah, like the Ring cameras doorbell and stuff.
Yeah, plans to scan everyone's face at the door.
And put them where?
Who knows? So Amazon will be adding facial recognition to its camera-equipped Ring doorbells for the first time in December, according to the Washington Post. So how do you, just before you even get into the article, how do we feel?
What are they going to do with the data? Where is it being stored? Is there, like, who's in charge of disposing of the data? Like,
here's actually,
it's the same old, same old.
Yeah, that all comes to mind for me, too. What I actually thought about more so was there's just no consent. Because unlike certain other technologies, I mean, what if you are visiting somebody and you just, at their front door, your face just got scanned now. You didn't get to really say yes or no. You consented
by showing up.
I guess so. Because they say the feature will be optional for Ring device owners. So like, if I have a Ring, I can choose if I want it to do the face scanning thing. But that's like my choice. But my choice will now affect anybody who walks by my door or whatever.
There should be some type of a sign or disclaimer. By stepping forward, you consent to
have your face scanned. And that's actually what privacy advocates are saying. They say that while the feature will be optional for Ring device owners, privacy advocates say it's unfair that wherever the technology is in use, anyone within sight will have their faces scanned to determine who's a friend or a stranger. The Ring feature is, quote, invasive for anyone who walks within range of your Ring doorbell. Says Callie Schroeder, the senior counsel of the Consumer Advocacy and Policy Group, EPIC. They're not consenting to this. So Ring spokeswoman Emma Daniels said that Ring's features empower device owners to be responsible users of facial recognition and to comply with relevant laws that may require obtaining consent prior to identifying
people.
It's
not about the users. It's about the company collecting the data.
Yeah, I like how they do this little gaslighting trick where they're like, yeah, like we're making this cool feature and it's just up to Alec, who owns it, to kind of decide to use it responsibly. But it's really not, is it? Because
no. The problem isn't that like old man Herbert has facial recognition technology on his doorbell. The problem is like Amazon's collecting like thousands of face profiles and doing what with them?
Yeah, who knows, right? And it's interesting, too, because, like, when we say we're doing what with them, like, are they building a profile on you? Are they, like, face matching you to something?
Sending it to an AI to, like, train for, like, more of their, like...
Or if you're a suspect in a crime, Amazon is going to give your, like, all that face data to the police immediately when they ask. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we think, like, a guy who looked kind of like you was suspicious and he's on the run for this thing. And so now, like, it will just hand over that facial data from when you walked by this door. It's like, there's so many problems with it. I know Sorry, go ahead. You were saying
it feels like we're just moving towards that one scene in the Christopher Nolan Batman: The Dark Knight, where things are getting out of hand. So Batman uses facial recognition technology by tapping into every single like camera in Gotham to be able to locate. And like they immediately brought up the moral implications of that technology, and he had to destroy it like after he used it, because that's such a disturbing amount of power.
Yeah, you're truly like violating privacy.
Like, at just having these facial recognition enabled cameras just kind of any and everywhere. It's like, oh, it's only a problem if you're a criminal. I mean, sure, but also we're all being tracked that way, and I don't necessarily trust Amazon, the corporation.
Is this that typical with the ability dystopian, to track
just anybody?
Is that dystopian surveillance state thing? Like, you know, just all of your movements are tracked. You have no privacy. They build a profile on you based on, you know, kind of stitching together just your behaviors from all the different cameras that are tracking your face everywhere you go. And
why are we marching towards all of like the dystopian sci-fi novels that have come out in the last like, feels like 70 years. It's like these things that we've already read about them. We've read about how it goes wrong. And then we just create technology that helps lead straight towards it. And we're just like, I don't think anything bad will come of this.
I saw something interesting, something similar that like Google was doing with their new Nest cameras with like Google Home, where if you have like a little Nest camera on your door, it will do AI summaries of what happened each time it caught motion. So like normally, like the way these cameras work, maybe you're like a family member who maybe has one. Yeah. It'll just be like, you know, it will ping you when motion is detected within your camera. Right. So like the delivery man dropped something off, or maybe someone came and tried to break in. Either way, I have
a friend who uses it to track the stray cats.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because that's actually a separate thing coming up here in a second.
Oh.
But yeah, so like Google can, it'll just send you like, I guess, an AI generated synopsis of what happened. FedEx driver dropped package at door. Cool. Okay. Or like dog walked by and did this thing. But still, I guess there's just something where like with the idea of like adding in the facial technology, it's like, what if it just says like person who has a 98.7% match with like Alec, you know, showed up at your door, and like it's such an identifying amount.
That's just putting words to that technology. I mean, I don't think it having the readout is that bad. I think the facial recognition technology is the troublesome part.
Well, we've got a feel-good little anecdote that Amazon adds here at the end, so you can feel better about this technology.
Oh, okay.
Amazon says they're reuniting lost dogs with the power of AI in their announcement this week. This is with this technology. They say, thanks to an AI-powered community feature that enables your outdoor Ring cameras to help reunite lost dogs with their families. When a neighbor reports a lost dog in the Ring app, nearby outdoor Ring cameras automatically begin scanning for potential matches. So it's great, because if your dog gets lost in your neighborhood, then all your neighbor's Ring cameras, because you submitted one lost report, they'll all turn on and start like looking for this dog or whatever. And so that way, if your dog walked past your neighbor's house, it'll report in like, oh, that's where it was hitting, you know.
That's cool. Feel good. Feels story. Like a very small use. See, what I thought was like, oh, I guess that could be useful in like an Amber Alert type situation. But I guess we're not going that far. Let's focus on the dog.
My
Let's
thing is like
the missing dog.
Even if we give them some credit here and say, like, let's say we were using it for an Amber Alert, right? There's been like, you know, a kidnapped child.
I mean, if you're gonna spin this, I feel like that's probably a better.
That's the best scenario you can spin. Is that we're going to help find lost children.
Yeah, little Debbie got kidnapped, but and it was even an orange then, Escalade.
But even then, the idea that your Ring camera can be remotely tapped to look for this.
I mean, maybe you have to opt into it. Like, it's like you get a notification, there's an Amber Alert in your area. Would you like to help catch the predator?
They make you feel like an asshole if you didn't know.
Would you like to help save the life of little Debbie and catch the predator? Or would you like to doom her?
Yeah. It's your fault if she's never found. And then they put that on your record. Each time you say no, you have like a little...
The Duolingo owl pops up and he's sad.
Yeah. Okay. Time for the major AI story of the week.
Oh, no.
Sora 2 is out.
Yeah, I know.
Or, well, I guess it's Sora, but Yeah, so Sora, OpenAI's generative video app, has only been out for a week, but it's already opened a proverbial can of worms for the artificial intelligence organization. As users gravitate towards styles and figures from pop culture, Sora has generated a ton of media related to major anime and video game franchises.
I thought that was like one of the first things they like wouldn't allow their technology to do is to create copyrighted images.
I thought so too. So this new Sora video app came out, and you can hop on it and generate video, and it is frighteningly scary and realistic. Mostly because it is now able to basically like generate many different styles of video. And when I say styles, I'm not talking like, oh, like me as a cartoon or me as a watercolor painting. It can do all that. It's like it can emulate like cops body cam footage.
Or handheld shaky.
Or like shaky hand cam, or even speaking of like these Ring doorbells, it can like, I saw one thing where it's like this completely fabricated situation where like somebody came up to the door and they were like captured through like a door, you know, a Ring like type of camera or whatever.
Oh, wow. Had that kind of fisheye look.
Yeah, had the fisheye look and kind of the low quality and all of that. And yeah, so people have been using this to be like, I want Saving Private Ryan with Pikachu in it instead, and he's one of the soldiers. Like, you can just say any bombastic thing, and it will generate that. And obviously, Disney, Nintendo, they're not pleased. So OpenAI seemingly did not implement many measures to protect rights holders against their copyrighted content being used for generative AI. So the mess has prompted OpenAI CEO Sam Altman to issue a statement on the guardrails that Sora users can expect in the near future. First of all, there's actually a new social media app with this. I don't know if you knew about that.
I heard about that nonsense.
I don't know exactly what it's called. I've heard some people, I think, call it Slop Talk. Because yeah. It just works like TikTok, but it's literally every... So when you get on this app, I saw a video about it. When you get on this app, the first thing that it does is it scans your face.
Why? Why?
Well, I'll tell you why. So first, you know, you do like this, the whole like move your camera around and like, oh, get your face from a bunch of angles. And you make an account. And now because it scanned you, it can generate anything with you in it. You can be Alec receiving the...
Oh, it generates you content.
Yeah, it's you content. Alec receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. Alec skiing down a whatever. Like, it can generate you doing anything in any place. Alec just won the, you know, 100-meter dash in the Olympics. Woo, like, all these things. And because you have an account and your friends have accounts, if you add anybody as a friend, like if Alec added Paul as a friend,
I
get added to your list of people that you can generate videos with. So now, just because I'm your friend on this social media thing, you can generate videos with me or whoever else is your friends are. And so now I can be like, yeah, like Alec, Paul, and these other people went on a camping trip and like did this thing, and it'll generate. So, and it works like TikTok. It's just a bunch of like swipey vertical videos, just auto plays, and it's just stuff that people have made. You might remember Meta tried to do something similar.
I do remember with their little chatbot things and this fake Facebook.
Yeah. So what do you think?
What am I supposed to think, Paul? Like, an app of actually, like, generated content? It's a bigger waste of time than TikTok, and I never thought I'd ever say that. At least TikTok has, like, it's seemingly mostly, like, user-generated content, you know, by real people. This is literally content generated by a computer with no purpose. No, nothing.
So somebody, you can actually generate like what looks like video game gameplay. So for instance, here is some, this generated video of like a Cyberpunk 2077 mission.
Oh.
And it's like supposed to be emulating gameplay.
That's not what the tank looked like. Oh, that's not what that gun looked like either.
And so, I mean, very concerning, just that you can just generate,
if
like,
you've never played Cyberpunk 2077, that does look like the game. I don't know why it allows you to create a copyrighted work, especially to that degree.
Yeah, like this person said, this is from a tweet, how the fuck does Sora 2 have such a perfect memory of this cyberpunk side mission that it knows the map location, biome and terrain, vehicle design, voices, and even the name of the gang that you're fighting for, all without being prompted for any of those specifics? The only thing that it got wrong, it says, is the Basilisk tank doesn't have wheels, it hovers, which yes. you said, and Pan Am is inside the tank rather than on the turret. But they said, like, I suppose there's a fair amount of video tutorials for this mission scattered around the internet, but still, it's a side mission. So the fact that it was able to generally replicate it with that much detail is...
Yes, I'm curious what the prompt was that got them there, because it is a little horrifying that it had so much data to use to generate that clip.
Yeah.
Oh, we are truly headed for dark days. I mean, we've already been kind of getting into this whole thing where it's like, do you ever really know if the thing you're saying on the internet is real or not? Like, it feels like we're actually about to ruin the internet. Like, that you won't be able to trust a damn thing you see on there.
We won't.
And so at that point, you might as well just not use it anymore because...
I have heard that it's like a brewing theory that some people have that it will eventually become, and this is not just related to AI, but just kind of social media on the whole, is that it might eventually, there might come a day where human-made content becomes like highly desired because there's so much fake stuff that the idea of finally seeing something made by a human will be like seen as almost like a luxury, a break from the slop.
They're making it harder and harder to actually prove anything is made by a human. They want to make it look better and better and better to a point where it takes an expert to actually notice the difference. Like if someone had never played Cyberpunk 2077, they wouldn't have a whole lot of reason to think that clip was fake.
Right. Like, because they don't have the specifics. And I mean, I think that what's going to be kind of creepy is the onus being on, like, imagine me and you having to prove we're not AI right now.
That's true. Cause you guys are listening and watching our podcast, but
like, who's what
is
to say?
The evidence that any of this is like real content and not generated?
And it'll be weird to think that, like, you know, what would it take me to have to like do in my video to prove to people that like I am Paul? Because like maybe now I can't perfectly replicate it, but like 6 months from now or a year from now, like, will I have to just say like, hey guys, today's video is me. It's really me. But it's like, oh, yeah, I could say that.
Yeah, I could definitely say
and
that.
And so it's like, will I have to like show a calendar? Oh, but it could have generated that.
Could generate that.
Will
too.
I have to like. Take like pick the camera up and like do something that's just so jarring and unreplicable, like just have to shake the camera around and, like, do it because like just saying something wouldn't be enough, or like just show like picking up some little piece of evidence, okay, that could be generated too. So it's like it is very scary to think about that.
Like we can ruin the internet, we can ruin social media. We're going in some dark times.
Well, here's what Altman's got to say to these rights holders to quell their fears. Despite
the harbinger of doom.
Yeah, despite this move fast and break things approach, Altman is promising that rights holders will soon be able to exert more granular control over relevant properties. While he didn't share specifics, the measures will extend beyond just opting in or out of the app. He says, we're hearing from a lot of rights holders who are very excited for this new kind of interactive fan fiction.
Oh, they're excited, you say.
I'm sure they're excited. And think this new kind of engagement will accrue a lot of value to them, but want the ability to specify how their characters can be used, including not at all. We assume different people will try very different approaches and will figure out what works for them. But we want to apply the same standard towards everyone and let rights holders decide how to proceed. Our aim, of course, is to make it so compelling that many people want to. There may be some edge cases of generations that get through that shouldn't, and getting our stack to work well will take some iteration. So,
like that, the ramifications can be so large. Like, if everyone starts to create their own, like, let's say, like MCU movies through these AI generating these generated videos. Then what's the reason for Disney and Marvel to make any more MCU movies if people are just generating every possible clip they could ever want to see?
It also makes me wonder, like, and I know, like, we get on here and we bitch about AI every week.
Because there's so much.
Because there's a lot. It gives you a lot of material. But, like, seriously, though, when I look at just like, you know, here's this like TikTok app full of like AI slop content. Well, what is the point at some point? Like, would you, I already don't use TikTok really myself. Like, I'm not a scroller. I use some Instagram reels. I'm trying to not even really use that very much. But like when it comes to like scrolling through the mindless content, at least you get to know a person made it. But now like AI stuff has been slowly filtering into the YouTube shorts and the Instagram reels and stuff. But if it's literally a feed that is just straight up telling you, this is just AI, like this whole feed's AI generated. We're not even going to like pretend to trick you. It's just when you go into this, you know that what you're seeing is just a bunch of creative prompts that people kind of came up with. But none of what you see is like real. It's just generated by a machine. What would it do for you? Like, I feel like what would you get out of just scroll to the next like AI thing? Like, I guess, and I'm not even talking about like somebody who's as cynical maybe as we are, but anyone, like, I mean, I just, would it not just feel like I'm being played? Like literally I'm just being like played like a fiddle. Like I'm just on here like, hey, there's an AI thing. Like it's just,
I think you'll have people who turn into like little AI vegetables that, you know, they consume the AI content. It's enough for them. And, you know, their bodies and minds will slowly degrade over time. And then, but I think then there's going to be another group of people who start placing an extremely high value on live and in-person content. I think, I can honestly see someone being like, I will pay you like $5,000 right now to like paint a picture in front of me right here, right now. Like I could see like plays being more valuable because it's the only way to like watch a performance of real people and know that's what you're getting.
Yeah. I guess like, I don't know. I just find myself kind of like, I just don't really know, like, what the point of it is. Like, and this isn't me being, like, I have said for a while that I do think AI for just synthesizing some information or instructing you, like as a teacher thing, sure, I guess. Like, I think there are real applications.
Shouldn't be in creative works.
Summarize a PowerPoint. But I think, like, if it's just creating just junk, like, just cat videos and weird cartoon mesh stuff, like I don't see much to like about that.
I think a tool should always make the wielder better, and AI can make people better, but these like little AI art projects, who are they making better?
Well, maybe one of those people might be Elon Musk, because he promises that his studio will make a great AI-generated video game before 2026 ends.
Nobody wants to play an AI-generated video game. That's how you know he's a fake gamer. Like, what gamer wants to play an AI-generated video game?
Well, if Elon Musk will be remembered for one innovation, it'll likely be his ability to keep hope alive for fans and investors in spite of his ongoing track record. This article's words, not mine. The world's richest man is now promising that he'll be at the forefront of progress in the video game industry, where his nascent studio is aiming to create a great AI-generated experience. He made the declaration in a quote on his social media site X in response to a user sharing an AI-generated video by Grok. The video appears to be loosely based on a game like Battlefield 6, and you see in this video a soldier can be seen trailing a tank down a combat-riddled street, occasionally shooting bullets at a non-existent target. The video is impressive at first glance thanks to its realistic graphics, but the oddities are obviously present almost immediately. Here, I will show you this video right quick. This is the gameplay where this gun is shot at nothing, and it kind of seems to be like weirdly sliding down the road.
Yeah, and the objects in the distance aren't actually getting any closer.
Yeah, but he says that he's going to have an AI game in 2026, so
I feel like we are marching towards an abyss. You know, I don't want to be I don't like being a dooming kind of person. But like, are people not realizing that like we're just jumping off of the cliff of like creativity and art.
I think that so there are a lot of people who, when I like read responses, like you'll read kind of criticisms of this AI technology and you'll hear people's responses to said criticisms where they defend it. It's like, well, you know, this opens up creative works to like people who never could have had them otherwise, right? Like I can use this AI thing. Like, okay, I can't draw, but I can have AI draw for me. So like now drawing is no longer barred from me. But the thing is, to me, like my response would be, you can learn how to draw. Like, I think that there's this, forgive me if I'm maybe like taking this a little too far. I think that there is almost a like, I learned helplessness that some people have, mm-hmm. where it's just like, I'll never be able to draw. I'm just fundamentally bad at it and incapable fully. I just can't be taught how to draw. I can't learn it. I can't learn how to make music. I can't learn how to write. It's just somehow beyond me to do so. Maybe I'm too old, or maybe this reason or that. But like AI will let me do that. It'll let me be a musician. It'll let me be an artist. And like now the barriers have come down, so anyone will be able to do it, and it'll advance like art and creativity, and like we'll be able to make things that weren't thought possible.
No.
But yeah, it's like I don't really, I guess I don't.
Art is a luxury and always has been. Art is one of those higher level human abilities that is not at all related to our base survival instincts. It's one of the few things that we have over many other organisms on this planet. The thing is, not every person is supposed to be able to create what we would all consider art. It's not a skill everyone's born with, but that's what makes it valuable. That's what makes a movie worth watching. That's what makes a painting worth viewing, is the fact that not everybody can do it. You're not supposed to be able to create a video game. Like, not everyone is supposed to be able to do that. Not everyone's supposed to be able to draw, like, or paint an excellent painting. If we all could do it, it would not be anywhere near as impressive, and it kind of defeats the purpose.
Right, like, I think that it's kind of one of those things where, like, if you want to create great art, learn how to create great art. If you want to, like, you know, get good at playing the piano, practice and learn how to, like, play the piano. It's because that is difficult inherently. Not everyone will be able to do it, like, easily anyway, right? And that's, like, okay. I think that if everyone can just type in a prompt and, like, generate these pictures of people and things and, like, I guess this AI-generated game, I guess I don't know that I think it loses the meaning, but I think, B, when it gets democratized to that degree, this world that maybe you are claiming you want, where, like, everyone will be able to be creative. Like, I can't draw, but now I can because, like, I can type in a prompt. But then the thing that drawing brings people will no longer, your thing won't bring that to people, nope. If that makes sense. And so it's like, if everyone can do it, would anybody want to, like, watch your AI-generated feature film?
No, because no, they'll have their own.
Because they'd have their own, and, like, it wouldn't mean anything. And I don't know. I know that there's, like, a line of just, it's a difference in ideals or maybe, like, what people consider ethical. I don't know.
I swear, this shit's about this. It's, like, it's going to drive me straight off the internet, like, period. Like, where is that? Like, oh, he's just going to be out in the real world doing and living things because the internet can't be trusted to have anything worth viewing.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's...
Except for this pod, of course. This pod will never be made by AI, and yeah, will always be just Paul and I, real people, not AI people, making it, so...
I mean, if you ever suspect this pod is, like, not us, I don't know what to tell. I mean, I don't...
We always have five fingers, see?
Yeah, we should keep... Oh, uh-oh.
We always have five fingers.
Okay. Well, that's the stories for the week. I guess that brings us to a little bit of pod, eh?
Yeah. What questions we got this week?
Got some viewer questions. As you guys know, you can leave them at the forum in the description or also just toss them up on the YouTube community. I'll try to pull from both wherever I can. The link is in the description. Just another reminder. So, yeah. Here is... Okay. This is a fun one, actually. Okay. Chicken sandwich or hamburger?
Ooh, it really depends on the day, but I'm going to go hamburger, I think.
I'm also team hamburger. Not to say that chicken sandwich is bad.
Chicken sandwiches can be fire. I feel like there's more of a risk of getting a bad chicken sandwich than getting a bad hamburger. If that makes any sense.
Wait, you think that it's...
There's more of a risk with chicken sandwiches than hamburgers.
I think I agree with you. I think it is easier to get a bad chicken sandwich than it is to get a bad hamburger. Although a hamburger does have more variables.
Yeah, there's more parts.
So maybe that could mean it's like easier to
get. Like someone could get your hamburger order wrong more easily. But I've been sold some pretty garbage chicken sandwiches. Remember when the Popeye's chicken sandwich came out? Were you there with me when they served us the ball of chicken?
Yeah. Oh, that made me so sick.
It was basically a sphere of chicken with two buns on it.
Yeah. I remember when the Popeye's chicken sandwich craze like first kicked off. It was like people were just freaking out.
I remember we waited a few weeks before even trying to get one, and then we got a ball of chicken.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I think that like a chicken sandwich is a nice, simple, like... It's just simple and easy. Like, it's... Yeah, I like the appeal of that. Solid. But I am more of a hamburger fan. Like, I just... What do you usually get on, like... What does a full hamburger look like to you?
Whatever comes on it.
So you're not picky?
No.
The only thing I'm picky about is actually that I want vegetables on my hamburger. I do not like when it's just, like, burger, cheese, and, like, nothing else.
Oh, like the McDonald's cheeseburger.
Even those, I think, have pickles on them. Oh, it's not much,
They usually do have pickles, that's true.
But I always hated in school. You would sometimes get, like... hamburgers, it would just be like meat, cheese. I need something. I need a little lettuce,
the salad and use that as our
you add it onto there. Yeah, because like something about like if I don't have like some vegetable on my burger,
that makes it a balanced meal.
So yeah, apparently. That was a fun question. Okay, here's like
that's made me think of that old SpongeBob episode where SpongeBob had to try and serve a salad, and he just took a Krabby Patty apart, and it was like two pieces of lettuce and a tomato.
Yeah, I need a little bit more than that. Okay, so here's what somebody said. This is kind of their update on Genesis format, so I don't know if it's much of a question, but we can weigh in on it briefly. I quit Magic 1 year ago, then I bought a Yu-Gi-Oh deck, branded Despia. Quit playing after playing four matches. Honestly, did not like it much. Then got into Digimon, and I've been playing it for 1 year, doing local tournaments.
Hey.
Coming from this perspective, I think Magic has lost its core audience/non-commander players. That is a sentiment I've heard.
That's fair.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Is just too oppressive and insane to learn. It's like jumping into the deep end. However, Genesis format has grabbed the attention of many disenfranchised Yu-Gi-Oh! Players, including me. However, money to keep up with Digimon takes priority for now. Still, I think Genesis format has been successful in its goal so far. So they don't really have a question, but they're just sharing
their thought process. I mean, hey, I'm very much in the same position. Digimon's my favorite game to play. So when I'm allocating my my monthly funds for cards, Digimon's always top of the list. And only until recently did I start bumping Yu-Gi-Oh! Back up in my spending chart.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for a while, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Was the last game I spent money on. Because, well, we only had the one format, and if you invested in a good deck, well, you better play a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! To get use out of it before it's banned. But I think Genesis format is fun because it's a weird kind of almost eternal format. So you don't feel like your investment can just be tossed away as easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that Genesis is... I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily more affordable necessarily, but I think that it opens up so many older strategies, or like somewhat older strategies, that an investment that a person made a few years ago probably feels like it would go longer in Genesis.
And your cards never just banned.
Yeah, nothing's banned. So you can always play your cards. And, like, you know, advanced format keeps you on a pretty fast treadmill. Like, the new things come out and you better be keeping up.
Yep.
Whereas, like, with Genesis, I mean, we saw, like, Exo Sisters, a deck that debuted in 2021, early 2021, like, got top 8 or whatever. And, like, same with Generators. They were, like, from 2020 and, you know, a pretty pure Generator deck was, like, able to compete. And so it wasn't just a matter of, like, okay, are you playing, like, Yummy, Mitsurugi, Canine, whatever, like, you know, stuff just from the last, like, 6 months or whatever.
Strategies are still favored, I think. But this is probably the most competitive older strategies can ever be in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Also, glad to hear that you're having fun with Digimon as well. That's always...
Yes, can't wait for BT23.
Yeah, somebody was actually asking another one of these questions. That they were like, y'all should discuss Digimon more on the podcast.
We would if Paul played.
Yeah, I don't play it, so I just wouldn't have much to say, but...
And the thing is, I don't talk that much about Digimon because I don't compete like that. So I can't really do, like, competitive, like, talking points. I just play with my buddies at locals. Whatever decks we bring, that's our meta. And it's very random.
Yeah, so cool. Now here's our next, like, actual question.
Okay.
To Paul and Alec, which digital TCG do you think has the worst or best ranked PvP progression system?
Oh, Jesus.
This might be a little tough because
we don't play that.
We yet. Only, like, maybe play one each.
Oh, Jesus.
But he says, from his experience, his or her experience, the worst PvP ranked progression system is Marvel Snap, which you did play a bit of that.
I did, because, never ranked.
Because they use the casino-like system in which you gamble with the cubes to either get some or lose all the progress. So. Combining with no demotion checkpoint, it causes the most stress-inducing experience whenever I play ranked matches. Maybe you can speak to that.
I guess I never got that deep into Marvel Snap to feel the stress. I mean, I found the wagering fun. In a sense, you get to choose... how much your points will fluctuate before, like, the end of a game. And you have to choose before you actually know how the game ends, and that's the gamble. I mean, to me, that's a bit more exciting than what you get in other games, because...
Now, this no demotion checkpoint thing, I guess that means that... So, like, just to be clear on what this might mean, like, there's, like, a threshold that you can't get demoted past.
Yeah, some games have that.
Where it sounds like in Marvel Snap, there's not one. Like, you can just...
It does not sound like Marvel Snap has one.
Oh, God, that's rough.
I mean, that means a losing streak can really...
You can just tumble, like, all the way down the hill.
Throw you down.
Ooh, okay. Well, here's what else he says. On the other hand, the ranked PvP progression, I think, is unironically the best, is Rush Duel PvP in Duel Links. Due to having no rank demotion compared to ranked speed duels, so I guess they do have different. I haven't played Duel Links in much ever.
Haven't played since the last Invitational we competed in.
Yeah, they say that even though you lose multiple matches, you stay at whatever rank you moved up, and that encourages me to experiment and play more without any stress. Sounds good. Here, I'll just contribute what I know about Master Duel's ranking system. I hate it. there's, like, small, decent parts about it, but I think, like, Master Duel's ranking system, it has demotion checkpoints, so you can't, like, fall out of a rank. It wasn't like that at first. They had to add that in because people would do this exploit where they'd, like, fall out of a rank, then immediately rank back into it to get the gym rewards and just kind of, like, rinse repeat.
Smart play.
They took that out, but, like, just the general experience of it still sucks. It's polarizing. The decks are always extremely powerful. And, like, it's just best of one coin flip. It's a mess. I guess I haven't played enough other games. Did you even get, like, far enough into Shadowverse Worlds Beyond to know? No, not really.
I don't usually try and get involved in, like, rank ladders and, like, card games. I barely play digital card games. And so I don't have that strong of an interest in it, so I can't evaluate it. I apologize. I failed this question.
Yeah, it kind of sucks because I do think it's an interesting thought. Like, not a bad question. I don't think we are currently, at least, playing enough, like, mobile card games to have much to say.
Because because to get into, like, the whole rank climb of a mobile card game means time, dedication, and oftentimes money. And
yeah,
don't have enough of those.
I do think that, I guess, just to maybe give since I feel like we weren't able to answer the question, I'd like to just try to say something about it. I do think, like, it's, there's something to be said about, like, making the ranked experience feel like it encourages you to, like, as I mentioned in this question, kind of encourages you to experiment a bit and not feel like absolutely everything is on the line, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's ranked, it's competitive. At the end of the day, you're trying to win and not lose. But I think that at least allowing you to do more is better than not. Like, ranking, something that I've heard people want in Master Duel is, like, the ability to rank on a per deck basis. Where, like, okay, maybe I got to Master Rank with my, like, competitive thing, but now I want to switch to playing, I don't know, Generators, but, like, I'm still just stuck in Master Rank. And I can't demote from it. And so now it's like, maybe I want to, like, relax. I don't want to play against Malice and Rhyzeal all day with my Generator deck. I just want to play, like, in gold, because we all know in Master Duel, like, gold's kind of the
standard.
The gold standard where you sort of want to be. That's where the fun decks sort of are, where people are trying to win, but, like, they're playing cool stuff, and they're all hard locked into gold. And so I think, like, I wish, like, Master Duel kind of allowed me to hop in back into a certain rank. But then there'd be, like, smurfing.
Now you want to smurf, huh?
Yeah, and see, and that's...
No, so, go play at the highest levels and bring Spriggans.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So, yeah, you know, it's... Master Duel could do better in that regard.
Yeah. I play ranked in a lot of other types of games, though.
Yeah, what do you like in your regular, like, mobile
shooters
games?
And fighting games. I do a lot of, like, ranked grinds in those games, and they've been very cruel to me. I do have thoughts on ranking systems in general. Like, for instance, smurfing's a no-no. In that way, I like rank decay protections, where a highly skilled player of a game, let's say 2 months ago, they reached the highest rank the game can have, I don't want them to ever decay back into bronze with me. At no point at the lowest level of the game should you, in any game, should you be playing against someone who's reached the very heights of it. I don't care how long they've taken off. I don't even care what character they're playing. They yeah. should not even be allowed to drop that low. There should be a floor. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of games, that's usually, I think it should be like the platinum level or the gold level. But, like, there should be a scrub level just for the scrubs.
For the scrubs. Yeah, I was going to say preserve something for the low-level player to be able to grow without just facing, like, the grandmaster level person who's trolling on stream.
Like, that doesn't happen too much in, like, games like Street Fighter. But in games like Marvel Rivals, that's incredibly common because they have full rank decay where someone really can go all the way from, like, Celestial all the way down to Bronze. And...
Oh, yuck.
Like, because I love slumming it in my rank games. Mm-hmm. In Street Fighter, I think I got up to Platinum and that was kind of it. And I play against a lot of people at my skill level. I win some, I lose some, I have a good time. In Marvel Rivals, though, I've always been, like, sub gold, and by the time my games end, both me, my teammates, and I'm sure the other guys on the other side of the screen are all sweating our asses off. And it's like, wasn't this supposed to be the lowest level of difficulty in this game? Why am I so tired?
Yeah, I
why does this guy have a 50 kill streak? How
there is something to be said about, like, I guess I don't envy having to, like, design these online systems. Like, it's easy to sit and critique them, but I don't think I would want to be the person who has to be in charge of it. Because, like, on one hand, I would like Master Duel to let me take a different deck into gold. But then, after hearing what you have to say, I mean, like, who's to say I won't just abuse that privilege and, like, okay, well, I made it to... Because, like, here's one of my things. Is, like, I like to get to Master Rank 1 using my favorite deck as opposed to, like, the best deck. So it might be, like, Rescue Ace as of recently. But, like, then what if I want to hop back into gold, but I actually decide to play Malice? And what's stopping me? It's a different deck than what I got to Master Rank with, but it's technically a better and more, like, oppressive deck to face. But I just wanted to play something different and relax in gold today. I'm innocent. I can be trusted. So, like, it's tough because, like, you can't even... Like, there are top-level players, or we'll say high-level players in a fighting game, maybe, who, if they're on their main, they'll destroy you. But maybe their pocket characters, not as much so. Should they be completely barred from like being able to mess around with their secondaries? I still think, yes, they should not be allowed to throw their secondary into bronze rank, because that's still too far of a disparity.
Right.
Like, you know. But, you know, it's just tough.
One thing that helps, does not eliminate, but it helps, is like placement games.
Oh, yeah, those are true. I like that. Before
you
can
start your rank process, they'll put you through some evaluation games, and they'll typically place you higher than base level, unless you're truly trash like me. Like, I like placement game. I like placement games in ranked systems. It doesn't eliminate the problems of like smurfing, but it does help.
It smooths
keep games a little bit more competitive at the lower levels.
Yeah. So, a good question. Sorry we weren't able to.
We're gonna play more digital card games. You know what? Digimon Elysian should be coming out soon. So if that has ranked, I guess I'll try my best with that one.
Yeah. There's also. Oh, you don't do Pokemon TCG Pocket ranked, do you?
No.
Or does it even have ranked?
It does. I've played it probably a total of six games.
Oh, okay. I know you mostly just play like local, like or with like.
I open packs and I play against my brother.
Yeah, which is like also totally fine. All right, well that's it for this episode of the Pod of Greed. Hopefully you guys enjoyed. I know a lot of people will ask in the comments. So as a reward for the people who stuck around this long. If you like our sweaters, we got these from the Yeti. Yeah.
Yeti. That's T-E-E.
These awesome Yu-Gi-Oh! Sweater designs. There's a Kaiba one, a Yugi one. And they did not send these to us. We bought them with our own money.
No, we don't get sent things, guys.
Yeah, we don't have a affiliate link to give you. But if you want to pick them up, they're actually like only $40, which in today's economy for a decent quality sweater, I mean.
That's not bad. You could do a lot worse.
Which one of us wore it better? Yugi or Kaiba? Let us know down below. All right, we'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.